that, you know, there are different types of sugyas that we do, and some are easy to talk about more in the abstract, more outside, don't seem to be so connected to the daf. And some we have to pay closer attention to the daf, and we try to get a mix of both a little bit because there's value in all of those things. But this sugya is particularly fascinating, and there's a lot in and a lot out. And so you saw we spent a couple days just on the concept and the lamaisas of Arid. There's so much to talk about Arid, even without really hinging ourselves too much to the Gemara. Although, you know, certainly our goal, we had a similar experience, for example, when talking about Ribbis, we saw there was so much that we could talk about outside, but even plugged back inside, and was all directly relevant into understanding what was going on in that sugya. So here, this sugya is also a very special opportunity, because Arid, as we say, is highly practical and relevant. Eved Kenani, maybe less so, but comes up. But either way, there is a lot that can be gained. There's always a lot that can be gained, but we're going to be able to see that a little more clearly, that there's a lot that can be gained from a very careful attention to how the Gemara presents this, and the back and forth. And part of what I want to do today is a little bit, to an unusual degree, a focus just on the back and forth in the Gemara, and how we can kind of integrate that with a conceptual understanding of what's going on. And there's just a lot to benefit from in this composite sugya, essentially three sugyas in one, and how they are presented in the Gemara has a lot to teach us about the concepts. And it's always true, Halalai, we always have time to focus very carefully both on the words and on the concepts and on all of the relationship between them. But when it's particularly powerful, it's just worth calling attention to that. So, as we've seen, yesterday we read the Gemara together. Today, we'll try to understand it a little bit more. We're also going to have to, I think, read together again just to make sure that you see how things interplay with each other. But our Gemara here, the passage that starts on the very last line of Bavim and Beis and goes to the middle of Zayin and Aleph, is really three sugyas together. And how they connect or how they don't connect is something that we need to try to figure out. So we have the sugya of Arev that we spent a lot of time talking about, the sugya of Eved Kenani that we're just kind of getting started with, and the concept of Hanas Adam Chashuv, which is mentioned in our Gemara as well. And one thing we want to try to figure out is, do they have a connection specifically? Is there some reason why they're all here together? Are they just a continuation of sugyas that we've seen till now? Then, okay, all of the beginning of Kedushin is about taking the concept of Ha'isha Miknes and trying to bend the parts and move around different elements and mix and match and see what happens, and this is just a continuation of that? Or is there something that is connecting these three? So I floated that question yesterday. And if you have any further thoughts, having seen a little bit of what's going on here, do you have any further thoughts what might connect these three topics? The idea of Arev, Eved Kenani, and Hanas Adam Chashuv. So, as you keep that question in the back of our minds, yeah, Jonah?
Possibly, I'm not sure if this is true by Chashuv. Maybe it has to do with, like, an external force, like not external force, but like someone
spirituality,
outside,
supernatural,
someone other than the man starting the Kedushin process. And I don't mean that in a umrahi kind of way, even though there's discussion of that.
Yeah, well, that's like relevant here.
But
right?
I mean that in like more that like in Midin, Midin Arif, she's the one who gives him the idea first, and then there's, you know, as Midin Eved Kenani, you know, like there's other factors coming into play.
Okay, so you're assuming something which may or may not be true, right? That the question is, are there outside instigators here that are starting the process? Which is important, right? Because what happens, for example, with Eved Kenani? Is Eved Kenani necessarily somebody else's idea? Is it his idea?
Right.
Was it his plan? That actually becomes a detail
right.
that is not 100% clear
mm-hmm.
what exactly happens. Did he say to his friend, give her some money, I'm now using that as provision?
Right.
Did it happen after the fact? So if you're assuming that is important, then that's something we're gonna have to see. Any other thoughts about what might be going on here? Yes,
it might be like pretty like posh, but like they're all weaker, they're all weaker forms and less direct forms, so therefore, like, and then that's kind of why later on when it says v'chein le'ni mamon, so it says that you might have thought if it would have just said by Kedushin, then by Kedushin, right, where it's, what's it say, kol dehu, that it's a...
that maybe she would be happy with anything.
She would be happy with anything. So these lesser ways of Kedushin, all these less direct ways of Kedushin would maybe work for Kedushin, but for a sale, then maybe it wouldn't work.
So let me ask you two questions if you're going to say that. One is, are they weaker in a different way than any sugya that we've seen so far? Or are they just more examples of weakness? And are they really weaker? That line that you're pointing to is really more of a havamina. Right? You could have thought, we need this Rasha for this purpose. But Lamaisa, somebody were to say, as bizarre as it would be, you know, one of you guys were to get engaged and come to Masada Kedushin and say, listen, we're thinking of doing things through Rabbi Kanani, or we're thinking of going to the Orev route. Would the Masada Kedushin say, well, it's highly unorthodox? Would they say, well, you're only going to be married on a lower level, or you shouldn't really want to do this? Or, you know, you're not going to really have a real marriage if you do it through Ari. And a question you could ask, by the way, when you talk about things like this, is it's an interesting question whether there is such a thing. You know, the whole concept that we have of L'chachilas and B'diavits, for example. So the Rishonim discuss whether that's a concept that really exists on a level of the Torah, or is that just the Rabbanim idea that there are better ways to do things and best ways to do things? That maybe when you have a mitzvah that's from the Torah, it either works or it doesn't work, and there's no such thing as l'chachil or b'diavit. And Tosfos in Nida, for example, says that there are certain things where you have to assume that it's really all or nothing. That it's a tefillah and a mikvah, either works or it doesn't work. So presumably when you're talking about kedushin, you know, so you can talk about being a little bit pregnant, but a little bit married, there's probably no such thing as being a little bit married. Right? Although, you know, we talked a little bit in the context of civil marriage, is there room to distinguish? But practically speaking, once something works, so is there any difference? Yeshua?
Perhaps the oddity of having a third player between when we're trying to combine two people. It's supposed to be an intimate relationship that's not happening to husband and wife, and suddenly in all these cases there's a third person that makes it binding.
That's interesting. Although, I don't know if it's true about Alvin Pashut.
Or
you're saying the extra ego in the room. Somebody's too many people already. But
he doesn't need to be that. There are possibilities he doesn't need to be that in Pashut, no?
You mean the Maskana, it does, has to be done with Chashuv. But it's an interesting question in general. You know, is there anything thematically wrong with getting other people involved? And if so, though, it's especially interesting, actually, because you mentioned that, right, that we would have a bigger objection to Shlichus. Because Shlichus is really getting somebody else to replace a party here. And indeed, once you're saying that, which you've really thought about this way particularly, the Gemara's objection... It's interesting, you know, the Gemara at the beginning of the second paragraph, which maybe you've seen, you haven't seen, the Gemara at the beginning of the second paragraph talks about the concept of shlichus and mitzvahs in general, and that shlichus exists by kedushin, that either party, the husband or the wife, can appoint a shliach to take their role. But the Gemara says you shouldn't do it, that it's not right to use a shliach with kedushin, and the Gemara suggests that maybe it will interfere with the ahava, that maybe the person is not really, the assumption is they never even met each other, that's why they're getting a shliach to carry this out, and that maybe they're not going to be happy with the choice, and the Torah says, yahav l'orecha kamocha, which itself is fascinating, the assumption that that mitzvah that applies to all of us is focused also on the most personal relationship. But the idea that getting somebody involved and you should be doing it directly is going to compromise the Ava, I don't know if that's a little similar to what you're invoking here, but it's an interesting idea that maybe it applies, maybe there is something to that, that there really is a problem with getting any extraneous people involved in what should have been a one-on-one situation. Whether this thing is about that or not, it's a different story, but that's that notion might have a basis, at least in the Shlichus sugya. Okay, any further thoughts? So keep your minds attuned to the possibility that there might be something unique about these three, that it might even be different than what we've seen so far, and that maybe that's a little bit what's going on here. And we'll see in a second that there's a place where the Rishonim seem to be explicitly discussing the relationship of these three to each other. Or explicitly might be too strong of a word, but maybe it's... not explicit enough, but the question of the relationship between these three you'll see in a second, if you didn't notice it before, is possibly the subject of a debate in the Rishonim. So first of all, one issue that we started yesterday, but just to keep this issue on the table, is what is the relationship, so I just mentioned Shlichus in the context of Yeshua's point, but truth is, Shlichus might be a part of the sugya too. So what is the relationship between Shlichus and Eved Kehanim that we see from the Rishonim? Or we see, it seems to be a question in the Rishonim. Right, so this is apparently somewhat of a machlokas between Rashi and who else? In the Ritva, right? But exactly where their machlokas is not obvious. But they're definitely saying different things. How different is the question? So, is Shlichus involved in this picture? So here the man is having his kedushin paid off by somebody else, by a third party. Is that a Shlichus idea? So who weighs in on this? Like, where do we see this addressed? And so Rashi seems to say yes, right, that this is Shlichus. But who Shlucho? Elish Makadsha Bishalo. Right, this third party is the Shliach of the Chassid, but he is doing the Kedushin from his own money. That's the Chiddush. So in other words, what Rashi seems to be saying is, Shlichus, all right, we know that already, that exists. But here, the unique fact that requires Eved Kehanim is the fact that the money is coming also from the Shliach. You would have thought that the concept of Shlichus by Kedushin means that somebody says, listen, here's a ring, go find me a wonderful kala and use this ring to be Makadosh. So that we would have known without Eved Kehanim. But because the ring is the Shliach's, you could have thought that, okay, you know, this is the kind of question that comes up when you send somebody to buy a lottery ticket for you and then it turns out to win. So then the guy who goes to buy the ticket, he says, well, I bought it with my money, I really won. And you say, no, I asked you to buy it, it's mine. And then they get to a whole fight about it. Well, he laid out the money, so how does that work? So here too also, so let's say he goes in his Makadosh Yisha and he says, you know what, Taka, you know, she seems pretty wonderful and it was my ring, so I think I'm going to keep her. So how exactly does that discussion end up playing out? So is there an assumption that it's your ring, her, his ring? How exactly does that play into things? So here Rashi is saying that Shlichus, okay, that doesn't have to interest us so much, but the fact that he's using the Shliach, he's using his ring instead of the Chassan's ring, that's what Eved Kehanim comes and teaches us. And the next Rashi mentions it also, that Mikudashas Afagav Mamona Lav Shom Mishalechu, even though it's not the money, not the property of the Mishalech. Now, the Ritva, we know, disagrees. The question is, what is Rashi's opinion really? Because the Ritva says that, no, this is not talking about Shlichus. If this was a Shliach case, then we wouldn't need this whole story. Apparently, in the Ritva's understanding, a Shliach can use his own money. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday, that maybe it's not different than the Shliach using his own body. Right? We already have to expand the definition of personhood, essentially, to get the concept of Shlichus. So maybe we go farther with that. Right? The same way that you would have thought that a person can only get married by doing everything himself, and now we see that he can use somebody else's hand and somebody else's mouth and giving the ring and saying, Harayat, so then maybe he can use somebody else's ring too. How do we know how much that matters? So maybe that's not a chiddush here. So maybe it's only that even without Shlichus, there could be an effectiveness to this Eved Kehanim story, and therefore maybe even after the fact. So the third guy gave the ring to the kala, and the chassan says, bingo, that's it. With that ring, hareya mekudeshes. So again, that gets to Jonah's question before about who's instigating this, whose plan is this, does it matter, does it not matter? I don't know. We talk about, I guess, people are saving up to get married, so I guess they have this chassan is very out of work, so he's just hanging around with the kala for years, waiting for somebody else to come to give her a gift, and then the second half, boom, bingo, all right, so now it finally happened, and we've finally can afford to get married, and now everything else will be simple from here on in. So is that what's going on? So that seems to be a machlokas. Now, Rashi's opinion is subject to a little bit of interpretation too. Because where Rashi says that he is the shliach, so does Rashi mean he has to be a shliach for this to work? And shlichus combines with Eved Kenani to mean he does the action and he uses his own ring? Or would this be true even if it's not a shlichus? And therefore, the difference between Rashi and the Ritva is that the Ritva would say this is dafka, not shlichus, and Rashi could say it could be either shlichus or not shlichus. Right, so I think we touched upon this a little bit yesterday, and we saw, for example, one Rishon at least who says explicitly it could be either one. And who is that? The Rosh, right? The Rosh says explicitly, one way or another, that either he is a shliach or he's not a shliach. This then applies in both cases. So Rashi emphasizing shlichus, it's a little bit of a discussion in later svarim how to interpret that. Is Rashi saying dafka shlichus, or maybe Rashi is saying that no, we could be shlichus. Could not be shlichus, like the Rosh said, could be either one. But we're just mentioning that the shlichus is the most likely case, and maybe, as some achronim point out, the most mechudish case, because maybe you need to be told that even when he is officially a shliach, it's still a chiddush to say he can use his own money. Not a shliach would be the same din, but you might have thought that shlichus covers everything. So Rashi comes to tell you that no, even if he was actually a formal shliach, you still need Eved Kenani to address the monetary issue. Yes, sir?
Why would you be allowed to read Rashi that way? Doesn't seem to be a monster.
Well, that's, some people would agree with you, but well, some major Achronim disagree with you. And because I think the view of the Rashi explicitly, your question is why Rashi says that. So you're saying, why should I be allowed to read Rashi that way? Because you're saying, why is Rashi saying shliach if it doesn't have to be shliach?
Right.
Right, so that's what we just addressed, that maybe he says shliach because it's the bigger chiddush, so that even if he's the shliach, you still need Eved Kenani for this to work, but maybe it would still be true if he wasn't the shliach. Maybe. There are certainly those who assume that Rashi is talking specifically shliach-wise, but there's room, and again, room that a number of Achronim thought should be pounced on, to say that it doesn't have to be shliach. Again, that's the view of the Rosh explicitly. Where does the Rambam land on this whole story? How does the Rambam understand it? So let's look at the Rambam together. The Rambam is in Perek Hey, Halacha Chaf Aleph. Right? Actually, Chav Beis. Amar La, if he says to her, Halach Dinar Zeba Matana, here this dinar is a gift to you, V'his Kachi L'Ploni. And through that, you become married to this other guy. The Kidsha also Ploni. And now this other guy, the actual Chassan, he's Mekadesh. V'Amar La, Hare Am Nekudesh Esli, V'Hanazu Habalich. Here you are married to me through the sana that's coming to you because of me. Very complicated sentence. Even though he didn't give her himself anything, she got it from someone else, still that works. Okay, and then the next halacha talks about Avot Chashuv, we can come back to that. So what do you think the Rambam is describing then? Is he describing shlichus? Is he describing something else? What do you think? Jonah?
I thought that, I also have read the Rambam this way as well, that he's advocating for a lack of shlichus.
Okay.
Essentially that's going on. And that it's enough that your existence spurred the other man to give the woman money. And that's what you're doing to do.
Okay, so you're focusing on one of two details which I think are worthy of attention, right? First of all, the hana that he's emphasizing, which is interesting. Why is there a need to say that? This hana that comes to you because of me. But there's also another aspect here which seems to make a pretty clear statement that there's no shlichus happening. There's a detail here that he mentions that really shouldn't be necessary if there were shlichus. What is it? Well, why does he have to say anything? Right, how is a normal shlichus the Kiddushin Mor? Right, the whole premise of the shlichus the Kiddushin Mor talks about is he's not there. There's a whole discussion, by the way, if you're interested in these things, about whether Eliezer, when he got the shidduch for, I think we've mentioned this year, I don't remember, whether Eliezer, when he got the shidduch for Yitzchak, was he just a shadchan, or was he also a shliach? And the types of svarim, we try to advertise svarim during the svarim sale as much as possible, the types of svarim that you can go across the street and buy that focus on halachic discussions, the narrative of the Torah, so a lot of them pick up this topic of was Eliezer following rules of Shlichus L'Kiddushin? Can we glean anything about Shlichus L'Kiddushin from Eliezer's story? So in that case, and in the case the Gemara assumes in the second paragraph, the Chas is not there. Right? So it's not that the Shliach is, it's not like you would imagine you have a wedding hall, so the Chas is sitting in an easy chair in the back of the room somewhere, and he says, okay, friend, go up there and give it a ring as my Shliach L'Kiddushin. And then he yells out, hurry up, Kodeshus. The assumption is he's not talking. So here, the Rambam, by saying he's got to say this, so that is interesting stand by itself in terms of the requirement that he has to say anything because it gets into various issues of Amira and the like. But presumably it's not a Shlichus mechanism because it shouldn't be necessary for him to be involved at all. If this was shlichus. So that's also an interesting question. Now, here is another thing we have to call attention to. So I asked you to begin with, what is the connection between the three concepts mentioned in our sugya here? And if we can define a sugya using printer standards, that anything that's in between two sets of two dots is one sugya. So this one sugya here, what's the connection between the three cases? And as you try to speculate, so I also added that there might be some discussion in the Rishonim as to what extent they are related at all. So where do you find that addressed a little bit? Well, the Gemara tells us these three din. And that after the three dinim, it has an important statement. What statement is that? Jedidiah quoted it before. V'chein l'inyan mamona. So what we've said so far is true as far as money is concerned. So what would you think I'm talking about when I say, oh yeah, all of this is true for monetary kinyanim also? What are we talking about? What's true?
These cases.
These three cases, probably, right? So we just taught three things, that you can acquire something. Normally, people acquire things by paying money, the buyer pays money to the seller. But we have a concept, Arev, that it could be somebody else is getting the money. And we have a concept, Eved Kanani, it could be someone else is paying the money. And we have a concept of Mechashu, it could be the money is going in the opposite direction. But those three dinim, it sounds like, okay, now that you've just been taught those three things, so we say, V'chein l'inyan mamona, that is true about all of them. Now, if so, that would be an important statement about a relationship between these three dinim. That there's some commonality that was tapped into in all of these three things, and it's applied in another area of halacha as well. But do all the Rishonim agree that all of these three are carried over to Mamonos? Don't they know? Why not?
I think the Ran.
Right, so the Ran says in the name of who? Of the Rambam. Right, the Ran quotes the Rambam, and the Kesef Mishnah brings this up also, that here in Hilchos Yishus, in the context of Kiddushin, all these dinim are brought in a cluster together here in fifth parak of Hilchos Yishus. But in the first parak of Hilchos Mechira, only one of them makes it in. And which one is that? Arev, right, Arev, we know that's a Mamina's concept. So Arev is brought in the first parak of Hilchos Mechira, at Emikhani, nowhere to be seen. Adam Chashuv, nowhere to be seen. So what's going on? And the Kesef Mishnah asks, who gave the Rambam Amora status? I saw this Kesef Mishnah over there, he says, who let the Rambam disagree with Rav? Because our Gemara says that Rav is coming and telling us, you know what? So Rav is telling us, excuse me, V'chein v'in mamona, this is all true for Mekach u'memchar too. And the Rambam doesn't seem to sign on. The Rambam just says, only Arev is. So apparently he's going to have to read the Gemara more narrowly, and saying that this is not talking about the whole thing, but where did he get that from? So that's an important statement about to what extent are these three connected. Is there anybody in between? Well, what about Rashi? So look at Rashi, V'chein l'inyan mamona. So, hanach shmaisa d'rabba, d'alfina kiddushin midin arev, u'midin eved kanani, came l'inyan mamona, machal osada, ramalotena kasef l'ploni, v'sadi v'chur l'cha. So, kana, midin arev. Helef manam te sadacha v'chur l'ploni, kana osa ploni, v'sadi midin eved. And manam l'ploni, so what does Rashi tell us is included in the Chaim Linyan Mamona? Well, Arev is, and Eved Kanani is, and the combination of the two that the Gemara mentions also is. But what about Arum Chashev? Is that not related here? So does Arum Chashev work for business? So, I would have thought from the Gemara, yes. And indeed, there are other Rishonim that we can give you a look at also who say yes, but the Rambam doesn't bring that or Eved Kanani. And Rashi is somewhere in the middle. Interesting, though. So, apparently, Rashi holds that there's a link between Eved Kanani and Arev enough, but Chashuv is something different. Now, there are other views in Rishonim as well. Again, I can give you this supplement that maybe Odom Chashuv works like Chalitim, and that therefore works, let's say, for Metaltim. It works for other things, not for Karka necessarily, but for some aspects of Mekach u'Memchar, but not for others. So, this is a very interesting machlokes, right? This is leaving us pretty much wide open. What exactly is going on here? Are we saying that there is a relationship between all three dinim? Are we saying that there's no relationship between any of them, really? Or are we saying that Arev and Eved Kanani have a relationship, but Adam Chashuv is a different story? And are we saying Adam Chashuv has somewhat of a in-between relationship, it works like Khalifid. Now, what would you have thought? This Adam Chashuv that's muscling his way in here, like his ego seems to tell him to do. So, think about this for a second. What is the mechanism of Adam Chashuv? Right, this idea of Kiddushin within Adam Chashuv, right, that normally the Chassan gives the ring to the Kaaba. And this time the Rav Kali gives the ring to the Chassan, and it works because of Adam Chashuv. What exactly is the mechanism? And parenthetically, does that impact at all the sugya that we saw already of Nas Nahiv Amarhu, Nas Nahiv Amrahi? And so who addresses that, by the way? This is on the Maamar Bamos. It's a Tosfos and Daf Hei that addresses it. And Tosfos says that this could apparently be an acceptable example Nasnahi, Vamrahi. That that issue is not dealt with in the Gemara because it's not so clear it doesn't work. So that's not how all the Rishonim relate to it, but that's an interesting question. So what is the mechanism of Adam Chashuv? Logically, how does it work? Why in the world should there be Kiddushin as a result of that? There's no rain. Or there's no rain, at least in her direction, which is normally what we need. We need her to receive a ring normally, and now she does not. So why should we even think and indeed conclude that that affects Kiddushin? Jebediah?
Because a woman is getting a hanah that's worth the Shavuot Pruta.
Okay, so you're saying that the hanah is essentially replacing the ring. By what magic does that happen? Is it Shavuot Kesef? Sorry?
Substantiation.
Oh, beautiful. Okay, so that's one possibility.
In general, it's not that, like, is it a question that we need Kesef, that there's some strong presence of Kesef, that's this honorable thing?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it that there needs to be a monetary transaction, per se, where there is a financial transfer that this person is now affecting positive financial outcomes for another?
Oh, okay, so that's one type of question we can ask you, right? That basically, is it that we have this need to give her something, and because we have the sugya that we did also earlier this year, of Shavuot Kesef Kikasef, so then that doesn't just mean that it doesn't have to be cash, and indeed our practice is not to use cash, just in Ashkenazi circles, right, but to use the ring as Shavuot Kesef, but maybe Shavuot Kesef Kikasef means more than that. Maybe it means that goods and services, so services also can relate to Kesef, it's also worth money. People pay for services. So that includes even the covenant of accepting a gift if you are a person of such stature. So is that what's going on here? It's essentially Shavuot Kesef Kikesef, and that's what Arvin Chashuv is? So Jebediah is smiling because he wants to say yes, but he thinks that we're probably pulling him into a trap, and then the answer is ultimately going to be no, so he doesn't want to say anything. But we're able to interpret his Shavuot words for words. So, okay, so that's something we have to try to figure out. What exactly is the mechanism of Hanah? So, let me leave you with one more thought, and we'll have to pick this up next time. But here's part of what I was saying before. This maybe will help direct the thoughts in a certain path. So, part of what I was saying before about reading the Gemara carefully and about knowing exactly how that impacts on things. So, let's look at this line together again. So, before the Gemara explains Adam Chashuv, it says as follows. Find the line here. So, Boi Rabba, Helach Mana, Ba'kadesh Anilach. So, here, Kala says to the Chassan, here is money, and I will be married to you. Mahu, what's the story? Amar Marizotra, Mishmeder of Papa, Mikudashas, that works. Amar Ravashi Marizotra, what? That works? How can that work? Im Kain, Havale Nechase, Mishieshla Machrayas, Niknim in Nechase, Mishayla Machrayas. Right, so what does that question mean? So the way we explained it yesterday, this is a very convoluted, I spent some time on this yesterday, that is a very left field kind of question to ask here. There seem to be so many more clearly presented questions. Now, what's basically saying? Sounds like it's saying as follows. That there is such a thing as a kinyan agav. That there is a notion that you can buy one thing, use one thing, and have it work towards two different transactions. But normally the rule is that the actual kinyan is done on something like karka, on land, which is what we call the pasim shiesha hamachrayis, to have accountability if a creditor ends up taking it later. And that kinyan happens with the land, and the metalzel and something else can come along with it. I think I mentioned yesterday we do this in Erev Pesach, one of the many kinyanim that we do with the chametz, is that we also lease out the land where the chametz is, and that creates an agav that we also sell the chametz together with the places where it is. So normally the kinyan has to be on the land, and then movable things can come along with it. But now you're switching it around. You're saying that the land comes along with the movable items, because the movable item is the ring. And what's the land? The land is the kala. How so? Because we have a drash of Adam Hukosha Karkos. So people are associated with Karka, so it's as if she's land in this case. So now you're telling me that normally Aga means, yes, I can sell land, and property, movable property can come along with it. You're telling me it works backwards? That I can sell movable items and land in the form of people come along with it? How could that be? I can't have the chasim sheish nachrayas and the chasim nachrayas. V'anev chetanana, we learn the opposite. The chasim sheish nachrayas nicknamed the chasim sheish nachrayas. And Agra works the other way around. The kinyan is on the land itself, and the other stuff that comes along with it. The kasef shtar v'chadakar, under those terms. So Amalai, he responds to him, you solve this to Amrle Aga. You're assuming we're talking about Aga. Hacha ba'adam chashiv askina. No, different story. This is a specialized circumstance where the guy is a chashiv. The guy is a thrill that he'll accept a gift. That this hana, that he is accepting the gift, that's where it happens. So, what does it sound like just happened in our Gemara? The Gemara says, what? We're using Agav, but the Agav rules are backwards here, and that doesn't make any sense. And the answer is, no, put away your helpless Agav. We're talking about a different thing of Hana. Right? That's what it sounds like, is the back and forth in the Gemara. And it's a strange back and forth, because, like you said, there are so many other things you could ask. I mean, we just turned the whole Kedushin for the past six lot. We learned Kedushin one way, and we just said, hey, let's turn it upside down, and maybe it should still work. And the only problem you have is, oh, that Agav isn't being followed properly. And, mentioned yesterday also, doesn't it call into question the thesis we've had the whole time, that there's no kinyan on the Isha herself, that that's not what Kedushin means? And doesn't this line sound like we are saying that? That, oh, yes, she's going to be acquired like property, like land? And even if you're comfortable with all that, Agav is not one of the three kinyanei kedushin. So shouldn't I have a problem anyway? This whole back and forth is very surprising. So there is a fascinating read of this in the Sefer of the Chidushim of the Mishnah Eloi. You familiar with Mishnah Eloi? So you should be especially familiar with Mishnah Eloi. Why? John was not in? Because?
He
was the first, but he was an early Rosh Yeshiva in the Sashiva. As a Rosh Yeshiva opponent a long time ago, he was a Talmud of Chaim Brisker. His name was Shlomo Polachek, was a Talmud of Chaim Brisker. Here, again, it's a big commercial. Go buy the Sefer, the Kedusha Eloi in Nature. I assume it's available across the street. Very, very chashuv the Sefer. So he has many very fascinating things to say. Again, he was a major part of the history of our yeshiva. So he has a very important piece about this, which I will tell you more about next week, presumably. But for now, just to get you started, so he addresses the back and forth in this Gemara. And he says that, no, this Gemara was never talking about Aga. No one ever thought that Kinyan Aga was one of the methods of Kedusha. And our only problem was, how come we're switching the roles of Karka and Talpum? That was never the issue. The issue is, we know we're talking about a Kinyan Kesef. Right? Because if we don't have a Kinyan Kesef, then how are we talking about Kedusha? We know that Kedusha, we need Kesef Shtar Bia, so it's got to be something like that. So we're talking about Kinyan Kesef. But what the Gemara is surprised about is we thought until now that a Kinyan Kesef requires that the buyer gives the Kesef to the seller. But now you're telling me that no, it doesn't have to be that way. The seller can give the Kesef to the buyer. So then that transforms the nature of Kinyanin. You could have, for example, a sale on land where if I wanted to buy land, so normally I would have to give money to the owner of the land. I give him the kesef, he'll give me the land. But now you're telling me that no, he can give me the money. Okay, so if he gives me the money, So then the money is a problem. It could be a shell the cat stuff, or it could be any movable item. And that will transfer to me. And what's going to happen is that through that transfer, that's how we'll acquire the land. So that's what would upset Agav. We're not using Agav for tradition, but we're saying, who needs Agav now? Normally we have Agav and we say that it only works if the primary kenyan is on the land and everything else comes with it. No, let's throw Agav in the garbage. Now we could have anyone who wants to sell land can do a kenyan on some item instead, use that as a kenyan kesef, and let land come along with that. You follow? It's a very subtle reading. Basically saying, we never thought that this was an example of Agav when we were worried it wasn't following the rules. It's that if this works, and this is how a kenyan kesef works, so then this can work instead of Agav, and we don't need the limitation that we know exists by Agav. Follow? Should I say it again? It's a very subtle point. Should I say it again? Right, that basically what we thought when reading the Gemara is that the Gemara was assuming you were using Agav for your kenyan kedushin. Again, Agav being a transaction where you acquire two things at once, land and movable objects. And that's what you were doing here. And if that was the case, it's against the policy of Agav, because Agav normally means the primary kenyan is on the land, and the second kenyan, the by the way kenyan, like we use Agav today, by the way, the Agav kenyan is on the metalton. But here you're saying, oh, she gives the metalton in, and she comes along with it, she's comparable to the land, it's an upside down Agav. So that brings us a bunch of problems, because why would you think you could use Agav? How does it work in terms of the Isha not being nicknames? A bunch of issues. So says the Mech Terili, no, that was never what we thought was happening. We know it was no Agav. We're talking about Kenyan Kesef, right? We learned the Mishnah. We need Kesef Shtar Bia to work. So we're talking about a normal Kenyan Kesef. But what we just thought we worked here is that Kenyan Kesef doesn't have to mean the buyer gives the Kesef. It could also mean the seller gives the Kesef. So if that's true, so then this will overtake Agav completely. If I want to purchase land, so don't tell me that I can't really use Agav for the land because Agav can only be used for something else when I'm already making a kenyan on land. No, according to this, you could just do it the other way around. Have the seller of the land give Kesef, which will be giving with Halpon as a kenyan, and the land comes along with it. So Agav, which is limited, and says you have to make the actual kenyan on the land, not on the metalton, doesn't have to be limited. The seller can give a movable item, and apparently the land can come along with it. So that's what the Gemara was basically saying. Not that this would have been Agav, but that this is Kesef, but it would have taught us a din that would have contradicted Agav. So to that, then the Gemara says, no, no, no. This is Adam Chashav Askina. So what very important point emerges from this? Says the Mech Terili, and this will be the introduction to it, and on Monday I will fill in the rest and we'll see how others also supplement this point in a very different way. You see that first we thought we were talking about a normal kenyan kesef. And that a normal kenyan kesef may be surprised it can go in either direction. That you don't have to only have the buyer give the kesef to the seller, but the seller can also give to the buyer. And kenyan kesef goes both ways. It says the Gemara, no, 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 no. This is Hanaat Zodim Chash. So therefore, what does that tell you? Hanaat Zodim Chash is not a kenyan kesef in the normal sense. It's not simply that, oh, this is an extension of Shavu Kesef to Kesef. You can give a dollar bill or a ring or a performance that's worth a dollar bill. But there's some other track that's being activated here. And whatever happens with her giving him the ring, don't use that to redefine your understanding of Kayn and Kesed, because there's something new happening here. So that's what we're going to have to explore. Okay, so just to clarify, what do we need to explore here? That is it possible that Hanas Adam Chashuv, or Hanah in general, whenever we talk about Hanah by Kiddushin rather than an item, maybe it's a whole different mechanism that's not based on Shavu Kesef Kekesef, and we're going to have to understand what that is. And then we have to figure out, is Arev and Eved Kanani connected to that? And if so, maybe they also work in some different way. Maybe everything in this sugya, Arev, Eved Kanani, and Hana, maybe all of it is operating in some different fashion than a normal Kinyan Kesef. It's not based on Kesef, Shava Kesef, Kesef, but it's based on something else, and that may have a unique impact on how we understand things here. So just to quickly review the main points, we talked about the question of what's the relationship between these three dinim, and we had some theories. We talked about whether this din is premised on shlichus, whether it's excluding shlichus, or whether shlichus could or could not be, three possibilities of a relationship of shlichus to this gemara. We talked about the question of Kayn L'Inyan Mamona, major machlokes apparently, what does that refer to? Does it refer only to Arev, like the Rambam brings? Does it refer only to Arev and Eved Kanani, like Rashi says? Does it refer to all three, like we would have thought, and like other Rishonim say? Or does Adam Chashuv have some in-between thing where it works like Chalipin, it works for Mataltva, but not for Karka? And then we look back at the Gemara, which seemed like he was asking a question about Agag, and we mentioned the Meshter Yiloi's leadership approach to the Gemara, which shows that it's not really talking about Agag, but rather it's just trying to figure out what the Chidushim of Kayn and Kesef are from this sugya. And we then left us with the insight here that maybe at least Adam Chashuv is operating on some whole other track other than Shavu Kesef Kekesef. And once we understand that, we'll have to see if that also applies to Eved Kanani and maybe to Arev as well. Okay, to be continued. Again, tomorrow, bright and early for Seder, 11:30, Chavrusa with the earlier students, 12 o'clock, our lunch shmooze back here, and Shir after that. Who's davening for us? Javadai, you want to daven for us? Asher, should we stop? Or should we look for us? Thank you.